Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now, we're up to episode 2 of season 5. This one is called Darmok. It was directed by Weinrich Kolbe. Teleplay goes to Joe Manosky. The story credit goes to Joe Manosky and Philip Lazebnik. It aired back on September 30th, 1991. This is considered one of the most popular TNG episodes of all time. It's season 5 kicking off a great run here. This is the one where the Enterprise encounters the children of Tama, who speak in an incomprehensible manner, and Picard is beamed down with the Tama captain to a planet where he has to figure out what the hell is going on. Clay is here to talk about this one. Me and Clay are going to go deep on Darmok right after this.
Of Luwani, Luwani under two moons, Jiri of Umbaya, Umbaya of Crossroads, at Lunga, Lunga her sky gray. Rai and Jiri at Lunga.
Counselor.
I sense nothing but good intentions from them, Captain.
Mr. Data, the Temarian seems to be stating the proper names of individuals and locations.
Yes, but what does it all mean?
I am at a loss, sir.
Clay, I don't know if you're familiar with what I consider to be one of the best sort of creation pieces based off of Trek lore. But there is my favorite sort of fan service piece. Is a t-shirt that has a image of Picard wearing like a 70s rock outfit holding a guitar. And it says Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra with a tour date listing.
And yeah.
I think it's my favorite sort of just, it's like a perfect little joke about this. And
hopefully Picard is on the t-shirt wearing that sweet, sweet crushed velvet and leather jacket he gets in this episode.
Yeah, this is the appearance of the suede jacket, which is a huge mistake, in my opinion.
I don't know. I would wear that. I would wear that out in the town. That whole getup he has with that sweet turtleneck he's got and everything.
Yeah, with like a sort of gray-blue undershirt.
I'm surprised the exterior shot of the Enterprise hadn't turned the Enterprise into like a 1979 Fleetwood Cadillac or something.
It's a combination of like a smoking jacket mixed with like a windbreaker because it has like a sort of like stretchy bottom bit, which doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing, I forgot to mention this in Redemption, but...
It's his class jacket.
I forgot to mention this in Redemption 2. I wanted to bring it up. Season 5 has one huge, huge, huge problem with it. Do you know what that is? It has to do with the opening credits.
Anti-Semitism?
Well, besides the Nazi imagery that were present in this season. Season 5, for some reason, introduces, when they show the Star Trek The Next Generation title credits, it has like tracer lines behind it. Have you noticed that?
I haven't because I'll be honest with you, I skipped the credits.
Oh, I watched the credits.
Because that's a long credit sequence.
It is. It gets my blood going though every single time. But watch it once. Let me know what you think. For some reason, they added these like motion tracer lines behind what was a very clean image before. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so now it looks like the words are, you know, shooting out of the sky at you.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And it looks like it has dated the show by 30 years. It looks so terrible. It's awful. I can't believe they do it. I don't know how long they do it, but I really have to bring it up how much I hate that. But anyway, let's talk about Darmok. Wes in Boston recording a podcast. Clay at Somerville recording a podcast. Wes and Clay on Skype recording a podcast.
I don't understand what you're saying.
Let me say it 17 more times.
I don't understand.
What'd you think of...
I have to kill you?
I'm holding up the Ethernet cords in both hands. What'd you think of Darmok?
I thought it was good. I thought it was kind of an interesting... At first, it seemed like an interesting mirror to the original series episode where it's Kirk and that monster.
The Gorn.
Yeah. I think it's Arena. Or is that the name of the episode?
Yeah, Arena, yeah.
Yeah, where it's just the two of them on that planet and they got to fight each other.
In slow motion.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of a nice mirror to that where it's like, yeah, this would be the Picard version of that where it wouldn't just be, okay, I got to kill you. It would be him trying to, you know, talk things out and learn this guy's language. And
yep.
I really like this episode. I didn't so much care for the Triceratops predator monster.
Yes. Yeah.
But that aside, I thought it was really good.
I really like this episode. I think it's really, it's like borderline great. This is like a lesser great episode in my opinion.
Just because of Ashley Judd?
Ashley Judd, you know, elevates any material from a 4 to a 5. And she comes here and spouts some hardcore technobabble in her scenes. But I really love Darmok, and I was thinking about it. And I think one of the reasons I really, really like this episode is we've talked before about how we've had problems, or I've had problems, especially in episodes that the best example would be like a romance episode, mm-hmm. where they introduce a character and they try to build this relationship between people and there's not enough time in the episode to make you believe what's happening between them. I feel that this episode is similar to Sarek in that even though Sarek featured a character who'd been on the show before, it gets to a really satisfying emotional place in a very short amount of time that feels natural.
I think you're right. They do a good job with this. Having those two guys together, there's a great episode of The Twilight Zone, which actually stars Charles Bronson and the woman who played Samantha on Bewitched.
Yeah,
where they're two soldiers. They're like the two last soldiers in this world war, but they're from different countries, so they don't speak each other's language. And they have to figure out whether or not they should kill each other or coexist. And I think there is a third antagonist thing that they have to kind of team up against. And it's very similar to this, but it works really, really well. Because you get, you know, you don't know anything about these characters before it starts, but you get to see them interact with each other and you learn a lot about them and how they relate to people who are different from them. And it's really, it's kind of this episode of Star Trek is sort of like it's really representative of, I think, what the core concept of the show is supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like, oh, two groups who could just very easily go to war with each other, but have taken the time to figure things out and work together and everybody loves each other. And
right. Et cetera, yeah. Et cetera. Yep. There's bigger things at stake in a weird sort of way than just sort of getting into a conflict with each other. It's I have some issues with this episode, but to start off with the things I really like, I think this is kind of, there are problems with how they are portraying this language, I think.
Yeah, there are.
But I think that the main thing that it accomplishes is it works on a technical level because it gets around the universal translator mm-hmm. problem because you can understand the words they're saying, but not why they're saying those words.
Right.
Which is, I think, kind of a genius way to get around that problem. And it also, it's recognizable enough and they did a good enough job of the writing where you as the viewer can start to pick up on what the guy is actually saying. You know, by the end of the episode,
yeah,
like you know that SoCath, his eyes uncovered as he realizes something when the walls fell is a failure to do something, and I think that they did a really good job of. It's not like Tolkien or anything, but they've created a very small culture that you can grow and understand by the end of the episode,
right? And they, I think it's well done because they, they're. In the first scene with these guys when they're on the screen and nobody can understand them, excuse me. they're speaking fast enough and saying words that you're not comfortable hearing yet.
Yep.
So it does sound completely foreign, but they're actually using enough English words – that you can start picking things out. And so the more you hear it, like you were saying, the more you become used to it. But having those English words in there helps you kind of add context to the words that they're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of it just being completely alien.
Right, yeah.
And it reminds me a little bit of do you ever see The 13th Warrior?
Remind me what that one is.
It's Antonio Banderas is this Spanish warrior, I think, who gets who ends up going off with a band of Vikings, and it's a retelling of Beowulf.
Oh no!
But anyway, I don't remember the rest of the movie. But the part I always remember because it's the best thing in the movie is they're all sitting around this campfire. And they're all speaking this language that Antonio Banderas doesn't understand.
Yeah.
But the more he listens to them, the more it starts dropping in English words.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're watching the movie from his perspective, so English is his language in
sure.
the movie. You know what I mean? So as he's listening to these Vikings talk more and more, their language very slowly starts to turn into English.
Yeah, that's kind of clever.
So it's a great way to show that he's learning their language and can understand them now. I always thought that was a great way to show that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of similar to this. This actually might be a little bit better than that, because it's not completely dumping their language. It's actually making you understand what they're talking about.
Right. Yeah. They're not technically changing anything. You're just, as a viewer, you're becoming familiar with how things work for these guys.
Right.
They're also. They have little nice touches about how, you know, the show to a – you could sort of criticize the show to this point in that every alien culture you meet is sort of human with, like, you know, with some other sort of, like, ridge on their nose or something like that.
Right.
They tend to share very human things. These guys are humanoid, but they're, like, very different. And just the things of, like, they wear those little knickknacks, and he has that thing where he's sitting by the fire and he, like, drops the knickknack over and over again.
Yeah.
They sort of do very weird alien things that are never explained to you, right? You don't know what the point of him doing all that stuff was.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a much more sort of believable way that you would think a lot of first contacts would go between the Federation.
Definitely. Yeah. I did think it was kind of funny at the end, though, when Picard does that touching his forehead motion.
Yeah.
Because, obviously it's supposed to be touching that he's doing that thing. He doesn't know what that means.
The guy
does that once, and he does it after he, like, throws his shit on the ground. Like, he doesn't know what that thing means.
It means this is the blade I've killed 5,000 people with or something like that. It's just carrying it on. I agree. I mean, to break down the – I have one sort of major – I understand why they did it. I have one sort of major narrative problem with this one.
Mm-hmm.
I understand why they had to do this to enforce the audience about what was going on. I really hate the fact that Data and Troy figure out what is going on within 2 minutes of trying to figure it out.
Yeah, of the indecipherable language.
Apparently, you know, Starfleet linguists have been unable to crack, and they crack it just by being like, hey, is there anywhere where Darmok and Tanagra show up in the same place? And the computer's like, yes. Here's your example. This is what this means. I understand they had to do it because they have to give the audience like a firm footing on what's going on.
Right.
I really feel Picard should have just figured it out on his own. He kind of does, yeah. But they hammer it to the audience by having Data explain what's going on.
Yeah, I actually kind of wish that they had used Troy differently here, because I think she could have actually been really useful in that, because that first scene where they have her in the on the bridge and they're like, Troy, what's going on? She's like, well, I can't understand them, but it doesn't sound like they're, I mean, I don't feel any animosity coming from them.
Yeah.
I feel like she could be very helpful in that situation.
Yes.
You know, and maybe they don't end up shooting at each other if she's somehow manages to
sort of suss out what's happening, like what their general intentions are. Yeah.
Also, yeah. I do love that that even though Picard has kind of figured out everything, figured out the language, he does also do the universal thing of talking to someone who doesn't speak your language, which is talking in your own language louder and slower.
And slower. Yeah. he just and sort of like using your hands much more, just be like very Gilgamesh.
Well, that was the thing. Okay, so that was the problem I had with this with the narrative is they it takes way too long for them to try something other than talking. You know, because by the they get to the end and they're, you know, the guy's almost dying, and only at that point is Picard like, oh well, maybe if I start drawing pictures and using symbols, why hasn't anybody done that before? Or like the stuff that they're trying to convey, I feel like they could convey with gestures or hand motions or something that's a little bit easier than just being like, what? I don't what kill you? You want me to kill you?
Yeah. I think I agree. I think it's kind of a problem of the how the because the aliens they have that conference room scene where they kind of describe like what the Children of Tama, which is a great name, the Children of Tama, how they think, and the way they describe it makes it sound like they don't really think about things the same way. Like they describe it as they think of everything very abstractly, and they have no sense of self.
Yeah.
The problem is that they're human enough where they interact with each. When you interact with them, you kind of are like, why can't you just, you know, draw me a picture or something like that? I think that's kind of a limitation of the way that they've chosen to get this across. Because if they were too different, you know, there would be no possible interaction between them if they completely didn't understand what the other person was saying. So I kind of agree with that. It's my main issue with this language, which I think this is really just nitpicking, because I think the idea is stronger than the execution needs to be, or at least how well thought out. How does this race ever explain anything new to anybody?
Well, see, okay, so I was thinking about that. Yeah, I completely agree. The first thing I thought about when they have that scene where they explain how the language works, and I think Crusher or Troy says it's like if we were to say Juliet on the balcony.
Yep.
We would know what that means, but no one else would know free of context. So I understand that, but by that definition of how it works, that can only go back so far. Being referential to something only works as far back as the reference exists.
Right.
So, like, at some point, someone would have to have written something down or told that story, unless all of this just built off of word of mouth things that people had actually seen.
Right.
So it's kind of, it's an interesting thing to think about how the genesis of it.
I was thinking, it sort of ties into that. How do they educate? How do they teach their young how to talk?
Yeah,
you know, because if you don't understand the concept, how do you?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they kind of do that a little bit at the end when they say Picard and what's his name at whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay. Well, that's how they create a new thing.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, well, that doesn't make sense to anybody in this. That won't make sense to anybody outside of the people on this ship.
Right. Yeah.
So they're going to need to find a way to relate things they already talk about to this new thing.
Yeah.
But if the new thing means something new or something else, how do you do that?
Right.
Is it like Egyptian hieroglyphics where it's like, well, it's not bird. It's bird plus hands minus wolf or something, however that works.
No,
I'm an Egyptian scholar.
Explaining something new almost takes more effort because you have to just, you start with like a baseline and then you somehow modify it slightly.
Yeah.
Which is, again, it's sort of fascinating. I think that this concept is, it is both like sort of brilliant and sort of like, a little bit, you know, lacking kind of. I hardly hold this against the show because I think they chose a great idea or way to
I wouldn't say that any of that stuff is a negative. I think that's just
exploring what it actually would
mean.
It's
just a thought experiment.
And it's nice to, like we were saying before, rewatching this one is interesting, especially for the scene before they beam down to the planet where the captain and his first officer on the other ship get into an argument with each other. Mm-hmm. You can actually track what they're saying eventually because they're using the language and it makes a lot more sense, which I just think is kind of a fascinating thing. It's a neat little story device, and I think that the the scene where I just like the plot mechanics. I love the fact that them trying to rescue Picard the first time through the transporter is what causes the other captain to die.
Yeah, I really liked that a lot, but the only thing I didn't like about it is that there was no acknowledgement of it on the other end. Like, I feel like that's kind of a big deal. You know, like, there's no point.
It had never happened before. They didn't know how to explain what had gone on.
Well, it's just like, you know, I feel like you could have tied that into the theme of the story if, you know, at that last scene where Riker comes in and Picard's reading, you know, if he had said something about, like, you know, our hastiness to go to assume the worst ended up causing this guy, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Something like that would have been interesting. Not a huge deal, but.
I think I agree with that. I like the sort of mechanic of it's two plot lines that working together make sense. It's the A and B plot line working. It's not really a B plot line, but it kind of is. This one, we had an episode before where I complained about the B plot line kind of just exists to give the cast something to do.
Yeah.
And it's kind of distracting a little bit sometimes. I will say that I really loved Frakes as Riker in command of a situation that he's sort of unsure about what's going on. And
yeah.
He's kind of a dick.
Yeah. He well, I think it was, I really liked it because it was a good comparison of the two commanders in Riker and Picard.
Mm-hmm.
Because while Picard is facing a seemingly certain death at the hands of some battle he doesn't know that he's in, he still takes the time to try and figure things out and find the more peaceful solution.
Right. Yep.
Where Riker is just like, these guys stole our captain, figure out how to blow these guys up.
Right. Or, yeah.
Like he's all about getting, I mean, which is, I mean, rightly so. I mean,
No, he's making a decision that makes sense in both terms of narrative and what the character would sort of call for.
Yeah.
You know, it's unclear to them what's going on. He needs to get a little bit more aggressive to try to fix the situation.
Riker doesn't understand what's happening on the planet. The only people who understand that are Picard and the other guy.
Yep.
And he can't, there's no way for him to understand it because he can't talk to the other ship.
Right.
The only thing he knows is that they're really good shots.
that's true. Yeah, the Children of Tama are an interesting level of technology where they're basically just slightly, they're either equal to the Enterprise or slightly ahead of it in some ways, which is fascinating.
I do have to point out once again, I know that it's a product of the fact that this show was on a, like, 13-inch screen for everybody to watch. But there's no reason those ships should be so close.
Yes.
I mean, it's a nice composition where they have that giant ship kind of, like, sticking out of the top of the frame. And then they've got the Enterprise there. But it's like, they're like, you could throw a rock and hit the Enterprise from that ship.
Yeah, technically, a strong space wind will blow you right into them or something.
Technically, you could throw a rock and hit any ship because that rock would never stop moving.
Yeah, eventually it'll hit something, right?
Science.
That is deep, deep science. The episode didn't go into that, unfortunately, which is a damn shame. But we ended Redemption 2 by talking about it really just ends with Worf just sort of stepping back into his old role with no questions asked.
Yep.
He does it effectively here because everything he brings up is shot down by somebody at some point in this episode, which is back to the old Worf that we know and love. Children of Tama, did you have any? I feel like I don't want to give short shrift to how I think this is a really well constructed episode. I think it builds nicely on things. I think the way that they relate it to the Gilgamesh story is really nice. I like that sort of, you know, the way that they communicate is built on their previous myths, and Picard is going to relate it to our previous myths. You know, we're all the same, that kind of garbage. But it's really done very nicely, and I like that scene between Picard and the other captain where he's telling that story.
Yeah, I really like that scene, but I think it works inside the episode, but it is one of those things where I was thinking about it. It's like, well, I know what he's trying to do, but what he's doing wouldn't make any sense to the guy he's talking to.
I think it didn't. I think it doesn't matter. I think Picard.
I don't think it matters either. Yeah. I think it works. It works fine. But you know, it would just be. It would be like if I were like, Wes, I finally understand your language. So let me tell you something you'll understand. Blah 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 blah.
Right.
Blah 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 blah. Darmok. Blah 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 blah. Arms wide open. Blah 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 blah.
I agree. I think what the story is kind of saying is that it's baby steps at this point, and they've made a step just in that they're willing to talk sort of to each other and at least pretend to know what the other one is talking about.
Right. Right.
So I appreciate it for that, and I think it's tough just because I'm not super familiar with the Gilgamesh story, unfortunately. So it's not as hard hitting as relating to a Zeus or something where I would know. But I think the show, from what it explains, does a pretty good job of relating these two things together.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised they went that far back.
Yeah.
I thought they would use something that was a little bit more, I don't want to say contemporary, but something that was a little bit more widely known.
Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn. This is exactly... It's exactly a Huck and Tom on the river, or what, Huck and Jim on the river. Interesting. Well, I think we've talked about this one for a pretty good bit. I enjoy this one very much. Me and Clay are going to take a break. We're going to play an audio clip. It's probably going to involve aliens saying quotes, so be ready for that. We'll be back in a couple seconds with our final thoughts.
Cinder! His face black, his eyes red.
Tamak. The river Tamak. In winter.
Darmok.
And Jalad. At Tanagra. Darmok. And Jalad. On the ocean.
Sokath, his eyes open!
The beast of Tanagra. Uzani, his army. Shaka, when the walls fell.
Picard and Dathan at Eladril. Mirab with sails unfurled.
Temba, his arms open.
Temba, at rest.
Thank you.
All right, Clay, let's slip on our sweet suede jackets and give final ratings for Darmok, which is the second episode of season 5. You go first this time.
Well, I can't decide whether or not Darmok on the ocean sounds like metal lyrics or if it sounds like Cat Stevens lyrics.
Yeah, it's Darmok on the ocean. It sounds very video gamey too or something. There's something very, I imagine like Wind Waker, the Zelda game for some reason, where it's just him sailing around on a boat. It's also
all your Darmok are as wide open.
Well, I mean the other thing you can do is I think one of the when Troy is asking the computer for Darmok definitions, one of them is like a dessert.
Yeah.
So the album could just be the dessert in a boat on the ocean and just get some get all the cultures involved.
Yeah. Someone who's listening to this, write a song using that story.
Sokath, his eyes uncovered. What'd you think of this one?
I'm going to give this one a 4. I like this one a lot. I think they, so far, they're coming out swinging in season 5. These feel like they are, this one and the last one both feel like they are above average for what they've been doing the past 5 years.
Yeah. Yep.
And I mean, if we get to the point halfway through this season or whatever, where I start giving ones that are like this a 3, I'm going to consider that a success. Because that means that these good episodes are now the average episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Which would be interesting to see. I don't know how season 5 plays out, but
yeah, season 5 is good. Just going by episode titles, there's going to be a couple clunkers in there. Obviously, there always are. But I mean,
Here's a question for you: Do you think this episode would be any better or worse off if the, what are they called? The Brothers of Tarn?
Children of Tama.
Children of Tama. Okay.
They all play drums.
Do you think it would be better, any better, do you think it would be any better or worse off if they were more intimidating in their appearance?
It would probably help.
Yeah. Because I feel like they're kind of like, they're borderline goofy looking. And they're like, they're very unthreatening looking.
Yes. And even when they're yelling, they're not super threatening. Or like, I kind of agree. Like, I appreciate what they were doing where the, you know, the, it's well designed in that when the guy appears to Picard, he's holding up two knives. You know, in his mind, he's making a very clear statement of here, fight with me. But in Picard's mind, he wants to fight him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do kind of, I think they could have been a little bit more, either their voice or something. I don't know if that would have been a mistake, just to have them more of like a growly sort of voice, maybe. Something more intimidating. But I think that they, it also doesn't help that he's a little bit of like a portly guy who's like wearing a jumpsuit. What do you think? Would you have gone that way? Made them more aggressive?
I don't know. I honestly don't know, because I feel like doing that is more, a more cliched way to do it.
Yeah.
Because it's screaming pretty clearly that there's a misunderstanding of culture or whatever. Because I'm thinking, like, if they had used someone that looks like a Klingon, would it have still worked? And I think it would still work, but I think it would be a little bit more, I think you'd see it coming a lot more.
Yeah, I think the one kind of difference would be, at least in terms of the story, is that Starfleet has encountered these guys before.
Right.
You know, and they've said, like, everything went fine. We just had no idea what they were talking about. so if they're intimidating looking, it almost seems like they would be more on guard, which might interfere with the sort of the way that this story wants to go, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. But I don't mind them. I think their design is competent. It would be interesting to see if any changes in that regard would amount to anything. So you're going to give this guy a 4?
I am, yeah.
I'm going to give it a 5. I think it's a strong contender for like a top. Where would I slate this? It might be a top 10 by the time this is all said and done. It's a very quiet 5, sort of, which I kind of appreciate. I had posed the question to you before about whether or not sometimes I feel like the 5 episodes in Star Trek are like the sort of epic, something huge has happened episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is an example, I think, of it's a small scale, but it's really good, which is nice to see. Mm. It's not like yesterday's Enterprise where you're going back in time to write history, or Best of Both Worlds where Picard is assimilated.
Until the next episode where they go back in time to save that captain.
They go back in time to rewrite the Darmok story. They go back and meet Darmok and change everything that happened.
And wait till you see what happens when the invisible Triceratops monster teams up with the Borg.
What didn't you like about the... I hate the Triceratops monster. What didn't you like about it?
I think it brings a really good science fiction episode and drops it squarely in Galaxy Quest territory.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really goofy. Like, and I understand why they did it, sort of.
I was thinking about it. You know what I would have done?
What's that?
I would have had Monster Cam, and you never see the monster.
Okay, yeah. That could have worked. Yeah, I think... Or made it even less... If they had made it less clearly just a guy in a suit,
yeah,
if it had been like non-humanoid or something, that probably would have worked too.
Yep.
But yeah, it's just it. I mean, I understand that it's there because the episode has to have some sort of action to it. But it's just so it just doesn't work. Like there's in the Star Trek reboot movie, the first one. I don't know if this is just something that J.J. Abrams loves to do because he does it in the new Star Wars too. But there's a certain point where out of nowhere, Kirk has to run from a giant monster.
Yeah.
And it just seems so... And it's the same thing happens in Star Wars, where Captain Kirk has to run from a giant monster. And
It's not the prime universe of Star Wars. It's the other one.
Sorry, did I ruin it? Did I ruin Force Awakens for anyone who hadn't seen it? But yeah, it just comes out of nowhere, and it seems like it doesn't fit the tone of the rest of the movie.
Right,
the rest of the story. And I feel the same way here. I think, like, if they had done something that wasn't as clearly just, you know, we've got 20 minutes to build a monster suit kind of thing.
Right, yeah.
I'd be curious to know whether or not it was always meant to be camouflaged like that, like see-through. Was there a point where they built the suit and they were like, oh, shit, this is not going to work?
Yeah, that's true. Because the invisibility doesn't really serve much of a purpose besides it's just, like, you can't easily find it. There's no reason why if the monster was not able to go invisible, it would be any less of a threat to them.
Yeah, yeah.
It's also for the Children of Tama, the captain, he seems to know what's down there, right? Like, he plans this whole thing.
Yeah, that was the other thing that it wasn't entirely clear about, whether or not he, like, what this planet is, or if he's familiar with it, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
If he is familiar with it, he went down seemingly ill-equipped to deal with this, because the knives seem to do nothing to this creature.
Oh, yeah, no.
Like,
he was planning on having two of them having Picard get, you know, janked out of there by Miles O'Brien halfway through the fight.
Well, before that, Picard's blue suede shirt is ripped and exposing his bare chest, which is a nice touch that they had to go through. Oh, my goodness. Well,
something for the ladies.
Yeah, you got to get those female viewers. Anyway, guys, I'm going to give this a 1 of 5. I think it's a strong episode. I really enjoy it. I think it's a lot of fun. I find it very similar to Sarek. I get a similar sort of very satisfied response to it. It runs a great gamut. You feel kind of bad for the captain at the end, as you felt bad for Sarek in the Sarek episode. I think it's really, really effective. So thank you guys for listening. If you're on YouTube, a like and a comment's appreciated. If you're on iTunes, a rating and review is very, very helpful. Clay, thanks for coming on.
Anytime.
We just also heard news. We'll just talk for a second. Brian Fuller is going to be the showrunner for the new Trek series. So, Clay, do you have any thoughts at all about that? A sentence or two?
Yeah. I think, as I said on Twitter, I think it'll be good until the Enterprise has multiple serial killers fighting each other, running around on the ship.
And the bridge is very, very dark with a lot of sweaty people. thinking about things.
No, he does good stuff. He, you know, I was not aware that he actually wrote for Star Trek in the past, so that seems like he's a good fit.
Yeah, it seems like it's the best of both worlds. You get someone who created a critically acclaimed show, right? So he's aware of how to create modern TV, and he actually
he's done a couple, hasn't he? Did he do 6 Feet Under or one of those shows?
Did he write on it? Hannibal's the only one I know that he actually is like showrunner for.
Oh, it is. Okay.
But outside of that, he's also, as you said, he worked on DS9 and Voyager, which is like you have feet in both worlds, which I think it was huge for the next person to have.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see that. It's on CBS All Access, which is bizarre, but that's the world we live in.
I can't wait to not pay for it somewhere.
Yes, that'll be I look forward to borrowing Sean's password to watch this.
Yeah.
So thank you, Mr. and Mrs. Cordy. Anyway, thank you guys for listening, and I will be back in a couple days with, I think, Ensign Rowe is after this. Yeah, it is. So see you guys.